You will probably hear some themes that you've heard through the other presenters that I'm going to echo. So it was an excellently coordinated presentation. I want to recognize my co-authors and our funders, and that we don't have anything to disclose. I'm going to talk about a project entitled Enlace, means link. It is a community-based participatory research project that's taking place in two distinct geographical regions, the South Carolina Midlands and the Texas Lower Rio Grande Valley. It's a project that's identifying cultural, social, economic, environmental factors related to health and health behaviors, particularly the health behaviors of physical activity among Mexican origin women. Briefly, these two distinct regions, the Texas Rio Grande Valley is, of course, a majority Hispanic and majority Mexican origin population on the border. The South Carolina Midlands is very different in this sense. It's a new settlement region. Prior to this data, which is the 2000 census, Hispanics and any others other than black and white didn't even show up on the US, the South Carolina census. They were less than 1%. The data from 2000 show that there were about 3% Hispanics in Richland County, about 35% are Mexican origin. More recent data show it's up to probably about 47% Mexican origin and about 6% Hispanic in this county. But we do recognize that there's significant undercount, and of course the majority are undocumented, so they also are often undercounted or not counted. This is a four-phase project, and we're actually finishing up the phase four, but I'm today going to talk about phase two of formative assessments. In the first phase, we developed some partnerships. We have a program advisory team. We did activities such as asset mapping. We did some community assessment activities. We engaged promotores, lay health advisors in the process. And then we did some formative assessments. We did interviews with community leaders in both of the communities. We did focus groups with our target population, with women, Mexican origin women, who were not participating in physical activity at the level of the current guideline and recommendations. And I'm going to talk about the results of this formative assessment. Okay, just some briefly to see the differences in the two groups. By age, the women who participated in the focus groups, there were 33 in South Carolina and 36 in Texas. They're around 38, 39 years of age. Country of origin was very different. This is the most significant difference. There were no U.S.-born women in South Carolina, but about a third of the women in Texas were actually born in the States. But as you can see, the majority were born in Texas in both of the groups. The women in Texas who are foreign-born have been in Texas or been in the States for twice as long as those in South Carolina. Interestingly, the marital status is different. There were about 80% of the women in Texas who are married or living with a partner, compared to about 55% in South Carolina. And the employment is also, this arrow doesn't want to. The employment, nearly 60% employed in South Carolina, compared to about 21% in Texas. So we see that the women coming in South Carolina have come to work. Working is the main focus of their existence now, and many of the women in Texas have been there. They have more stable families. They live with their families and their children. Income was about the same, years of education about the same, household size about the same. The women in South Carolina had lower self-reported health status. For the qualitative data, we did the focus groups in Spanish, and we did the interviews in English and Spanish. We transcribed in the source language, and we did the analysis in the source language. We did some open coding and then developed a coding scheme, and then did common coding according to that scheme. Then we did focused coding and a focused analysis, and today I'm presenting that focused analysis related to the social and environmental marginalization of these women. So some of the main themes that came out, the dominance of women's work, both in family and employment contexts, social isolation relating from language barriers. It was more predominant in South Carolina. Access barriers, poverty, economics. The physical and social environment ranging from safety issues to fear and distrust, which you've heard other presenters talk about. The dominance of women's work, wow. This was reflected in women's reports of their responsibilities at home and in the workplace. It's not only that women felt that they didn't have any time to do physical activity, but they didn't have time because of their family responsibilities, because of their work. And this was the social and cultural expectations regarding women's responsibilities to the family were one of the things that sort of framed this. So in South Carolina, in both Texas and South Carolina, family responsibilities were something that women talked about. They have family responsibilities. They have to take care of their children, their families, their husbands. In South Carolina, one of the primary focus is work, employment, getting employment, maintaining an employment. So time for physical activity was not on their radar. It really was work is the primary determinant in their lives. There's some cultural and social norms behind this. So women's work was also to be a good wife and a good mother. So not having time or not taking time for self also showed that they were spending their time on family or on work. There was also sort of the flip side of that. If a woman was seen as taking time for herself, participating in exercise, there was a sense that that could be perceived as being self-centered or selfish and therefore not socially condoned. There was also a tendency for self-deprecation. We're flojas. We're lazy. We're a little tired, exhausted. You know, we don't. You know, it's sort of our fault. Self-effacement came through also. There were also some reports that if women appeared to be taking care of themselves, if they were going on a diet or maybe trying to do some exercise, that this might raise the suspicion of husbands or partners or some social criticism, that they would be putting their own needs ahead of the needs of their family. Then there was just general lack of social support. I mean, they didn't see other women like themselves or other family members out engaging in leisure time physical activity. There was fear of public exposure and also, again, a risk of judgment. One woman said, well, if somebody's out seen out walking, the other people are going to say, she must not have anything else to do. You know, is her house clean? You know, has she done all of her work? Why is she out just taking a walk for exercise? There were, of course, the idea that some partners would restrict mobility, perhaps due to jealousy or insecurity, but also to safety concerns. They didn't want the women out in an unsafe environment. Social isolation. There were lots of contributors to this general sense of social isolation. Most of the women don't have access to public transportation in Hidalgo County, and as well as the South Carolina Midlands. There are just practically no good public transportation. Most don't drive themselves or don't have access to cars. In South Carolina, those who do drive are usually driving without documents, so it's really risky to be doing to drive. Limited community engagement involvement and language barriers, particularly in South Carolina, were a part of that. They had very little interaction with the dominant English-speaking population. And there were lack of culturally and linguistically appropriate physical activity options. A woman who doesn't speak English is not going to go into a gym for an aerobics class in English. even if she does have the transportation and the money to pay for the class and childcare and things like that. Again, fear of public exposure related to the undocumented issue. This came through loud and clear, and unfortunately, since we collected this data over a year ago, it's gotten much worse. The fear of deportation, fear of arrests. Then the underlying marginalization of poverty. So as others have said, with the economic downturn, the family economics and getting food on the table were really priorities. Then women who live out further in Texas in the more rural areas, or women who don't have access to public transportation, they depend on other people. They depend economically and socially. So they don't have that much agency in what they can do. There was also sort of association of physical activity as something that middle or upper class women do. They go to private gyms or swimming pools. They didn't see those activities as something that was a part of their lifestyle. And physical environmental constraints. Now, particularly in Texas, the women had lots of concerns about their neighborhoods, the stray dogs that are out, the traffic, the drivers who don't stop, who speed, and a concern about gang members and gang presence in the neighborhoods. And just the lack of lighting, lack of sidewalks. Both Texas and South Carolina are very hot in the summer, and getting out and doing exercise outside is also an environmental constraint. And then even in Texas, in the communities where there were some walking trails, there were some community centers, there might be other kinds of barriers that they weren't open earlier in the morning or late. They didn't have lighting, again, because of the heat when it's cooler, or they didn't have safe access to these places. So it's logistics, operational barriers, the physical barriers, and then, of course, as we talked about, all the social barriers. So we see that social marginalization, whether it's through the language and cultural barriers, the women's work demands and their cultural values around work, whether it be family work or employment, the basic economic constraints. These are women with very limited economic means. The lack of social support and role models, the environmental constraints and operational barriers lend us to believe that we really do need to think about ways that would be more culturally and linguistically appropriate, that would be low cost, that would be convenient for them in a more supportive, culturally and linguistically appropriate environment. But because we're talking about social justice, it's not just about getting a program that would be appropriate for these women. We really have to look at these broader issues that we've been talking about today and at this conference. our environments in poor neighborhoods are not livable and they're not walkable. We still have gender and cultural norms that encourage, that don't encourage women's work balance, life balance, and those are social issues. The previous speaker talked about sexism, racism. These pervade all of the environments. We have basic environmental safety and security concerns in the communities, transportation policies and services. Both in Texas and in South Carolina, there's a lack of public transportation, but the private transportation is, people are putting themselves at risk every day they get in cars when they're driving because they don't have the documentation that they need. And we don't have any really control over that. Then we have the broader language and immigration issues. As I said, since we collected this data, there's been rising nativism and immigrant sentiment and continuing English-only sentiments and policies. So we have a lot of work to do, not only to create programs for women at the local level to not only help them become more physically active, but more integrated into their communities so they are not as socially isolated. But we have a lot of other broad issues that we must address also. So I want to thank you, and if you have questions, you can contact us. Thank you.
So at this point, we're going to open it up for questions from our speakers. All of our speakers are up in the first aisle. But before we start that, I want to thank you all for being here and for engaging in this dialogue about social determinants. And although we addressed a little bit, different topics in terms of the application of the social determinants of health, it's these core issues that I think transcend all of the issues we addressed today. So with that, if any of you have any questions, I'd invite you to please ask them of our speakers. Right over here. We have a question right over here.
Yes, I had a question for, Ms. Gould, about, you talked about taking a history of the social determinants at the health center. I'm just wondering in terms of personnel, like who would be working on that? Would that be the healthcare provider or other auxiliary health workers, or how that would work practically?
I'm going to go ahead and answer the question.
So if you want to maybe repeat the question.
So I think the question was what personnel are going to be taking care of this new intake questionnaire. Is that correct? Okay, so Julian basically received permission from all the way at the top of CMAR to develop this new questionnaire. So then that questionnaire, we're in the process of trying to get it as short as possible, but then it will be piloted at his Burien clinic, and then once that works out, we'll go ahead and pilot it at the rest of the clinics. So it will be administered throughout the entire clinic process, or that's our goal. Oh, is that what you meant? Okay. Normally the patient navigators, who are the health corps volunteers, end up doing a lot of these patient histories. So it's my guess that the patient navigators will do most of it. But I've seen Julian also, go through it and ask any questions that are missing. So.
Other questions? Well, I have a question for Dr. Macias in terms of now that we've gotten a glimpse into the context in which these women live in these two different parts of the country. What are the plans in terms of putting some of this knowledge into practice in terms of partnering with local service organizations to maybe address some of the concerns or issues that these women are having?
Well, that's a big order, right? But we actually did pilot some intervention, an intervention which was delivered by women from the community promotores. But we also are working with other organizations. As you said, I'm in women's and gender studies. We have a project. We've been working with one of these communities for a number of years, and we now have a community advisory board, and out of that community advisory board came the issue of working with the Latina community and doing some integration. So we've started doing listening groups with parents of children in the schools, because one of the remaining safe places is schools. I mean, and parents do take their children to schools, but they also have communication difficulties in communicating with the schools. So we're trying to find places that are safe to integrate the women into the community, and working on both sides. So that's just one example, but it's an ongoing challenge, and working not only with the Latina community, but working with the dominant community. It's an African American and white community, and they're also feeling isolated because they can't talk with these new residents. So.
You have a question back there?
Yes. This is for any of the speakers. This is going off of my school's presentation, and also, talking about the women that they spoke to, or any of the individuals, the priority was jobs and employment. So how do we as healthcare professionals take that into account into our approaches, and what type of partnerships, or just on that level, or on the personal practitioner level, do you see that we should keep in mind?
So basically what's happening with the Health Corps volunteers is that they changed their role and what they were doing at the clinic. For example, if someone came in and said, I'm having trouble finding a job, they would figure out where they came from, what the resource issues were, and they were trying to explore what was there and what wasn't there, because there's a lot of invisibility about trying to find a job in the Latino world. So that's what they did. That's what they worked on. They basically said, that's my job.
For the Latino day labor community, the members of participants in my group have worked with the local day labor center, and that center now has developed co-ops for the women, and so some of the women are now involved in house cleaning co-op, where they have partial ownership, and there's about four or five women who are working on developing this co-op. They're working to develop a catering co-op through this as well, and a childcare co-op. So the peer-to-peer coming together part through this day labor center has really been able to address that a little bit too. But I would say it's the members coming together that were able to make this happen.
Any other questions? Okay, well, with that, I ask you to join me in giving a round of applause to all of our speakers. And again, on behalf of the